And so now I'm weirdly obsessed with the future of careers, the future of workforce. Not as much the future of work in the way we often think about robots are taking our jobs and how things are going to be automated out of existence, but how are individual human beings going to work in the future? And what will that do for them as people? So I'm obsessed with that.
Hey, friend. So excited for this Portfolio Career podcast episode with Scott Pollack. Scott is a longtime business development practitioner and thought leader. He's worked at companies like WeWork and American Express. He's built a portfolio of projects around business development, including a book. He is currently the founder and CEO of Fernio, a professional development community for the modern workforce. If you're interested in the reasons why and ideas to nurture relationships over your career, which I believe is super important, this episode is particularly for you. So here we go with Scott.
Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinski, is here with Scott Pollack. How's it going, Scott?
I'm great. How are you?
If we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Scott. I usually try to leave it there.
Yeah. And so I'm sure people have follow-up questions, and we'll go into that a lot more.
Well, I usually ask about them. In all honesty, my proper introduction is my name's Scott Pollack. I'm the founder of a company called Fernio. I've spent 15 years in business development and partnerships split between startups and large companies like American Express and Dow Chemical and WeWork. And I left to start a company building professional communities for the modern workforce. But I try to start out by hearing more about other people's origin stories. So when I go to an event or a party or a meeting or anything else like that, I'm usually just, hi, I'm Scott. What are you all about?
Okay. Love that approach. And you mentioned 15 years, a lot of prolific companies. I'd love to start at a blog post of yours recently on the don't rely on the comma.
Yeah.
So maybe talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, it's something that I've come to realize relatively later in my career that my career and many other people's career has been built on the back of commas, right? I've been Scott Pollack, comma WeWork, and Scott Pollack, comma American Express, and Dow Chemical, and before that, NYU. And my career, many people's careers, have been built on the back of the validation that comes from working for big, sexy brands. I do this job of business development and partnerships. I think I'm pretty decent at it, but other people think I'm pretty good at it because I worked at big, sexy brands, that I had big commas in my name, as if that is any indication of whether or not I have the skill sets. And, you know, I think all too much people have relied on commas to fuel their own careers, at the same time look to other people's commas to validate their worthiness for a job, their worthiness for a conversation at an event. You know, we look at people's name tags and quickly do an ROI calculation and then move on, purely based on one's commas. And I feel like that's a problem for a variety of reasons. And one is that, first off, there's many people that have been left behind by their lack of commas, people that didn't have the opportunity, didn't have the desire, et cetera, all sorts of reasons to work at these large companies that you might recognize and yet have tremendous experience, but no commas. So you may not know it. You may not give them the time to learn what they know and how valuable they could be. And also, it's a problem because increasingly the world of work and careers, I believe, is moving away from a comma-driven life and career path where, you know, we're no longer going to be able to afford to go to colleges and spend $250,000 or more dollars on a degree for a job that doesn't necessarily exist right now, and therefore you can't study in school, or to work at large companies where tenures at companies are not necessarily what they used to be, and people are increasingly freelancing and finding portfolio careers that they jump from role to role and don't have the tenures that warrant them to rely and ability to rely on those commas. So I think that's a good thing that we move away from commas. I think it's been a plague of our professional lives for all too long.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what are some ways to kind of balance out that situation, or how can somebody step away from the comma and start to build a better career for the long term? You know, what are some examples or tactics, so to speak?
Yeah. I think most of the success that certainly I and I think many people have had in their careers stems from meaningful relationships. You know, and in fact, I started a company that I say is building communities. And when I define that term community, I define it as a network of meaningful relationships. You know, and if you think about the communities that you're a part of that lead to professional opportunity, they are the meaningful relationships that you form at work or at school or elsewhere. The way that we build those relationships is by really investing in getting to know people and being valuable to one another, working on projects alongside other peers and being a good, reputable colleague by being a contributor of knowledge to people that you can mentor or give value back to people who've mentored you, you know, going to dinner with five or six other people just like you. Those are the ways that over time, with an investment of energy and effort and value to others, you build those meaningful relationships. And usually that is how opportunities arise, by investing in your effort in community, mm-hmm. and the relationships that you have. And I think that is how you can become reputable, not for your commas, but for yourself, for your period, right? David Dubinsky period and Scott Pollock period. It requires being validated for yourself, not for the external sources that you get. As good of a resume is, just people glance at it and they look at the names. Mm-hmm. And if they can instead have a resume that's born out of years of experience with you as a human being, as a source of knowledge, a giver of value, a resource, whatever form or fashion that takes, those relationships are what drive a career.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As you're building long-term relationships and, you know, changing jobs and stuff, what are some ways that people could keep relationships warm as you're kind of changing either different paths and stuff?
I think people do a disservice to themselves and to the relationships that they have when they only think about those relationships when they need something. And this happens all the time. And, you know, people get busy. It's hard to keep in touch with everybody on a consistent basis. But what irks me and I think is a bad way to go about nurturing relationships is only coming back, you know, instead of warming up that relationship over time, you try to microwave it. You say, hey, David, it's been a long time. How are you? Hey, by the way, I need to know if you're hiring at that job. Or, hey, David, it's been a long time. I hope everything's good on your... Okay, now let me get to what I need from you after not talking for whatever period of time. It's so fake. It's so inorganic. And if one just, number one, actually cared, because it doesn't seem like I really care if I said that to you. Like, how are you? I don't care. I want to get back to what I want. Mm-hmm. But if you really care, if you earnestly are a person who cares about others and you demonstrate that by not coming to them just when you need something. But, you know, it doesn't have to be every week, every month, every 6 months, touch a mace. Let's grab coffee. Just when I send you an email and see how you're doing. We'd love to talk on the phone for a few minutes. Just even the touch base with earnest interest without a need or an ask behind it. That's how relationships are built. And over time, of course, asks on both sides come. That's what being a friend is about. That's what being a colleague is about, a member of one's network. So by focusing on, first off, just really caring and demonstrating that concern, that interest over time, that keeps a relationship alive. It doesn't let it get too cold so that you have to quickly warm it up to go make your, to get your meal out of it. And that's something that I really try to focus a lot on myself, is keeping in touch with everyone. And it stems from the fact that I really am interested. I love hearing about people's professional journeys and what's going on in their lives. And I think the more we do that, the more opportunity it opens up for our lives.
Mm-hmm. I love that, the microwave analogy. It's so true. Right. Like, where did this come from? And it's just like, so hot.
You know, we talk about warm leads and cold leads, warm outreach, cold outreach. I think the best kind of outreach is when you don't have to warm anything up. It's already on a simmer because you haven't let it get cold. Mm-hmm. Then you don't have to nurture a lead. You just have a relationship, and then that can be leverageable in an earnest, real way for whatever value either side needs. And it could be a friendship, it could be a professional relationship. Doesn't matter, but it's the same principles that apply to just building a relationship that serves both parties, whether it's professionally, whether it's transactionally for instances. All of that is built on a strong foundation of a real relationship.
And so you think people get it wrong with the microwave approach?
Absolutely. I mean, there's instances when sometimes you're desperate, you need to eat. And so you throw in a frozen dish in the microwave and you got to get dinner. And I can't fault people for that. I just think that if you can be proactive, then you should. And I think it's an opportunity literally right now that I'll bet anyone who's listening to this is thinking about someone that they might have thought about reaching out to, that they want to reach out to, not because they have an ask. Maybe they're thinking that they can't reach out until they have an ask, a reason to reach out. And I would suggest to anyone who's thinking that way right now to just shoot that person an email with two lines saying, hey, such and such, been a while, love to catch up, been thinking about you, love to say hello. Okay, that's more than two lines, but something along those lines that is just that. And you would be shocked by how often the response to that is real delight, maybe a bit of surprise. But when you don't end that with an ask, where you're not saying, and by the way, can you do this for me? But rather, I just wanted to check in. It creates a depth of relationship. It becomes a new foundation of a relationship that can be stronger and that you can nurture one coffee chat, one dinner, one ask, one give at a time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've been blogging for a while on a prolific site called Start of the Deal.
Yeah.
Which for those that are listening, Scott has a whole library of blog posts related to relationships, partnerships, etc. And there's a course related to that as well. And there's also a book. And this is how, you know, one of the reasons how we got became friends was this whole book on what exactly is business development,
yeah.
You know? So maybe, for, especially in the context of modern work and emerging work, maybe talk to us about what is business development and why you wrote this book.
Sure, sure. So, you know, there's two ways I can go about answering that. There's the job of business development, which in my very technical definition, it's a role creating long-term value for an organization from customers, markets, and relationships, right? That may or may not resonate with people, but what it is also, what business development also is, and I speak less about in the book, which is more for people that want to figure out how to do that job. But what I've identified by writing that book, by being in that role for most of my career, by talking to others, is that it's a job that didn't really exist 20 years ago. It's an emerging field that is in many ways evolved out of other roles like sales and you know, looks at new ways of distribution and product development and all sorts of things that has created a new job that many companies can leverage to their benefit. But for the individual who is in that role, it can be really challenging. Throughout my career, I had focused on partnerships as a job. I came out of college. I studied finance and information systems. I had thought I'd be an investment banker or consultant like every one of my colleagues, my schoolmates, and realized I have no desire to do that nor the skill. But sales seemed like a really good foundational skill set for me to gain. And mm-hmm. So when I came out of college, I actually went to the Dow Chemical Company to go work in a sales and marketing rotational program. And unlike most of my colleagues, who went through, you know, 1 year rotation and then were placed somewhere in the sales org, I was one of a handful of people that was placed into a group focusing on what they call distribution partnerships. And I had no idea what that meant, but it wasn't really sales. It was partner management. And so I stayed with Dow for a few years, left to go to American Express, where I thought, I'm going to go here and learn marketing. And I joined a team. I had two opportunities to join. One was focusing on direct mail, which is like the most classic marketing job at one of the most classic marketing companies you can possibly ever get. And the other job that I was this role focusing on distribution partnerships. And that job paid $1,000 a year more. So I took that job. Very fortunate to take that job. But I didn't realize that I was, again, kind of a little bit different than my peers. I wasn't in sales at Dow. I was in partnerships. And I wasn't in marketing at Amex, even though it was part of a marketing team. I was in partner management. And over the years, I eventually found my way, realizing that there's a career track to be had in partnerships. And my business card then said business development. I was like, I guess that's what I do. But I had no idea what the hell that meant or where I was going with it. That's what led me to start writing, teaching, speaking about this ambiguous field of business development. And I started teaching a class called called BizDev 101, and then transitioned that term to the first slide. Said, what exactly is business development? And I realized it resonated with people because they're asking the same question. And over time, as I tried to be technical about what that job is and how to do it well, and just teaching helped me do the job better at Amex and then WeWork and Sumall and other companies, I also realized that there's many, many, many people out there who also had that feeling of being a professional ugly duckling in a job that they couldn't fully define. They didn't know where they're going next in their careers. They are often the only one of their kind. There wasn't a flock to flock with, and so there's tens of millions of people that are in jobs that didn't exist 20 years ago that do today. And that is what really kind of inspired not only the book, but really my course of life for the past 18 months or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ugly ducking. So it sounds, it's really interesting of how you've kind of utilized that approach, and correct me if I'm wrong, is feeling like you're not fitting in where you currently are, but then understanding there's a lot more other people that are potentially like that. And then you found the tribe, and then you build relationships around that. But with Fernio, it seems like you're trying to, you're interested in kind of collecting people that aren't really fitting in into fitting in.
Yeah, you know, I use the word tribe, and I think that's the right way to think about it, that, you know, being able to be surrounded by other people in any context, professionally or otherwise, that people that understand you, that know what you do, that with whom you feel a sense of belonging. That's super important and valuable. And going back to, you know, beginning of human civilization, where we gathered in tribes of people who helped one another and supported one another. I think that the opportunity to find your tribe, to find your community, your network of meaningful relationships in a professional context is becoming increasingly difficult. Number one, because there's a lot of these jobs that it's not obvious who your fellow tribe mates are. Because these are jobs, you know, like business development or data science or growth marketing or customer success or product management or even social media, jobs that didn't really exist 20 years ago that you can't study in school. And therefore, you're not always surrounded by classmates who know what you do. You might be the only one of your kind in a company. So you feel like an ugly duckling. You don't really know where your peers and colleagues are. And you don't really know where you're going 30 years into a career because no one's done those jobs for that long. The opportunity to find those tribes is limited now. For the modern workforce that is not relying on schools and long tenures of work, et cetera, in the way that, you know, our parents did. When you want to be an accountant or a doctor or a lawyer, you knew full well what to do in life, where to go to school, where you're going to go and work, how you're going to retire eventually. You were always surrounded by other birds of a feather. You had your tribe, you had your flock, you weren't an ugly duckling, you belonged somewhere. But increasingly, these new and emerging fields, they don't have those support structures. And that is really what I'm trying to create with Fernio, is a support structure to support the modern workforce that are increasingly finding themselves alone and isolated in their professional lives without access to knowledge and resources that many other people have. It's just trapped in their brain. And people that you can, you know, belong with, commiserate with over work after a beer with, and just feel like these are the people with whom I belong, who get me. And by building those strong, meaningful relationships, it unlocks opportunities. It unlocks all sorts of great things.
Mm-hmm. And so people can check that out, Fernio.com.
Fernio.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome to see how far I've come from the initial launch event and, you know, and more. So as you've looked at and built relationships with a lot of different business development folks and stuff, what do you think that people kind of get wrong? Whether it's like tactically, or where do you just think that some people, you know, as they're sharing some things that they do, what do you think that, you know, what do they get wrong at?
In terms of like nurturing relationships?
About relationships, or more about like the actual work. So let's say somebody is a business development person, has a blog and, you know, or is transitioning. What do you think that they kind of get wrong in the actual work?
So a big part of what people look to for business development roles, which is defined differently at every company, depending on a variety of factors, the connotation of what that job is, the stage of company, et cetera. I think a fundamental characteristic that's somewhat consistent throughout most, if not all, business development jobs is it's relationship-based. It is based on, you know, opening the doors to opportunities through other human beings and identifying together that there's a source of value that both sides, two companies, can create together. And that's what that role is. And that might be at an early stage company, you know, tech startup, for example. It might be more sales, because when I define BD as it's a function about building long-term value, what's valuable might be just bringing revenue in the door tomorrow. What's long-term is today, tomorrow, to keep the lights on. In a later stage company, it might be about partnerships. It might be about how do we kind of access another market of customers we don't have today. And in a later stage company, it might be about building a whole new business unit. How do we open the door to a completely new line of revenue and opportunity that we don't today? So the job itself looks different in every company. So I think some of the things that people are doing today needs to be really cognizant of the sense of value that both sides of the relationships that whether it's selling or building new business units or partnerships, can get out of that relationship. And I think having a strong, solid foundation of a relationship creates an opportunity to get to that transactional question of what is it that both sides are going to get value out of? And by being mindful of how both sides think about value, are you thinking about it as I want to sell somebody on this product? And they're thinking about, I want to leverage your sales team to sell my product and create a revenue opportunity for both sides. It's that disconnect in the way that companies and individuals are thinking about value that is something that's often a miss and creates these misfires.
Okay. All right. We talked about Fernio. We talked about the ARC. Anything else as you kind of think about teaching, writing, speaking, relationship building, anything else that kind of comes to mind as, you know, in this modern workforce and your career?
I think something that people will increasingly do is establish their own credential and not rely on the commas that we've talked about, not rely on the companies we work for to build our career, the schools we attend, the credentials we earn from other companies or institutions, but rather invest in their own reputation in ways that are not short-sightedly trying to sell something, not trying to build an audience to become an influencer that can monetize that audience, but rather focusing on how do I demonstrate that I'm a person that has perspective and insight and expertise and value, and I'm willing to give that value to others and share it with them, create value for others by doing those things. Doing things like talking to other people on a podcast, writing a blog, teaching a class about whatever skill you have, being even a listener, not having to be a proactive contributor, but earlier in your career, being a person who is paying attention to what others are saying, sharing that feedback with them that was valuable, or asking to learn more by being engaged with other people and building their community, building their network of meaningful relationships, contributing to their community and their relationships. Those are the ways that you'll stand on your own. And I think that's probably the most important factor, I think, in the future of building successful careers, is that you have your own optionality to create. And looking at what's the next comma on a resume that I can earn, I think is going to be less and less important than the value that you are known for and the contributions that you have made that others have recognized and that you fully own for yourself.
Okay. All right, Scott. Letting that one sink in. All right. Well, what are some ways that people can follow up and support many of your efforts, Scott?
Yeah, well, I'm personally, I listen on Twitter more than I actually tweet, but at SL Pollock on Twitter. And so I haven't written as much as I'd like, but I do have that blog at startofthedeal.com. And there's also more content I've written at fernio.com on our blog there. And I love to hear from people. I used to say that I was weirdly obsessed with business development. And what I've realized over the years was that, in writing, teaching, talking to people about the role, how to do it better, I've kind of realized that in many ways I was kind of the tip of the spear of a job that didn't exist a few years ago and figuring out how to explore a career track. And so now I'm weirdly obsessed with the future of careers, the future of workforce, not as much the future of work in the way we often think about robots are taking our jobs and how things are going to be automated out of existence, but how are individual human beings going to work in the future? And what will that do for them as people? So I'm obsessed with that. And I love having conversations about that and like this. So thank you for the opportunity to do it. And so if you, anyone out there, is interested in talking about it, reach out. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again for tuning in to another exciting episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. As a reminder, this episode with timestamp notes to follow along is also available on my website, portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can also record and ask a question related to all things related portfolio career to potentially be included in a future episode. Really excited for you to use these insights to build and grow your portfolio career. And as always, let me know what you think.